What's Always Drink the Good Stuff?
It's about food, art, travel, music, culture, lifestyle. It's interesting conversations with interesting people. And yes, sometimes it's even about drinking the good stuff.
The wine business is a vibrant tapestry of people from all walks of life, bound by their passion to create moments of joy, reflection, celebration, and connection, all while reminding us of our shared humanity. This is certainly true in my case and in the case of our guest today, psychologist, college professor, school principal, and winery owner. Yes, indeed. I'm happy to welcome today Dr. Viken Yakubian. Viken, welcome to Always Drink the Good Stuff.
Thank you. Thank you, Stepan. Thank you for having me as a guest. What an introduction.
All true.
Thanks.
Tell us briefly about yourself, please. But more specifically, given that we're in the wine world here,
yeah.
I want to explore with you the amazing work you and your family have done in bringing to us the amazing wines of Armenia, specifically Yakubian Halps wines. Tell us, how did this come about?
Sure. As you see from the beginning, when you introduced me, I haven't been professionally in the wine business. However, I've been very much into wine from a very young age. I think you were born in Lebanon as well, right? I was born in Lebanon. And my father, his education was from France. He lived in France for many years. So in Lebanon, he was very much into wine, not as a connoisseur, but just enthusiast. So from a very young age, I was very much into this aura and this wine culture, if you will, through my father. And we used to go to the Beka Valley every winter, pick up our stash, you know, Ksara, Tourelle, and different places, pick up our stash for the entire year. And just holding his hand at 6-7 years old and going through the winery was an amazing experience for me. And it got imprinted on me, on my personality. So that was my passion. I think before any other passion, it was really wine. But then, of course, you know, the Civil War, and we came to the States in 1976 with my brother, mother, and then my father joined us later, initially in San Francisco, then in Los Angeles, and we went to school, and I couldn't buy wine, so I used to go to Trader Joe's with my mom at that time. And then she would buy things for me. And I had this cellar that's probably, it was worth maybe $30 or something with all the wines. But that was my passion. It continued on until I started making a little money and I started collecting wine. And ultimately, I became probably a medium-range collector, read, you know, about wine, took courses, and I was very much moving from an enthusiast to more toward a professional. So I had some friends in Napa, and I continuously followed up. Initially, I was very much into French wine, then I moved more toward Napa. Now I'm back to old world. In any event, I'll cut it short. I think it was around 2004 or so, or a little earlier, I was having dinner. And for the first time, I had Paul's wines, Paul Hobbs wines, but for the first time, I had a Pinot Noir Cuvée Augustina. I don't remember the vintage exactly, but it was a beautiful wine. I was really amazed how balanced it was. It had this Burgundian undertones, but the Napa fruit forwardness at the same time, but with great balance. So when we came home, I was, I'm sure, tipsy. So I wrote this poetic email, found the winery address to the general address. I wrote this poetic email about the Cuvée Augustina Pinot Noir. And then the next morning, lo and behold, Sunday morning, I saw in my inbox an email directly written by Paul.
Wow.
Saying how moved he was by my email and explained that Agustina was his daughter. And the friendship ensued, discussion ensued. At the same time, we were going back and forth in Armenia. My brother, who's an attorney, was working there. So at that point, I thought, Paul needs to visit Armenia. So I asked him, and around 2006 or 7, we went to Armenia together. And basically from north to south, every single area we kind of scouted. And he liked the region. He was just looking, he was interested. Paul is interested in the geography, the people, as much as the terroir and the wine. So we had some places in Armavir. He checked, he liked the soil and all of that. But, in the summer it was getting too hot. So he said, Viken, it's too hot. We want quality. We want to focus on quality only. So then we went to the north. We loved that region, and then ultimately we ended up in the south to Vajotsor, small village, Aravnatsor. There was a lot there, empty, and he looked at it and he said, this one. So that's the beginning of our story. We bought that land and we started planning. This was 2008, planning on the parcels, the blocks, and the varietals, and all of that. At that time, our program was European varietals. So we did the design, we brought people for the analysis of the terroir and all of that, and we had all the blocks mapped out. And we brought the cuttings, mostly from California, variety. We weren't sure what would be the best option there. So we had Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, Syrah, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, small parcels, about a hectare each. The whole parcel is 18 hectares, about 40 acres. But then, as you have to wait for the vines. And I was getting very edgy. And I one day I said, Paul, listen, man, when are we going to make wine? I don't want to just drink it. He said, let's make it. So we found a couple of very nice vineyards. You were recently there in the Rind region. We took over existing vineyard. Mostly Areni and Voskehat. We managed the vineyard as best as we could. And then we made our wine. And the first one was vintage 2014, tiny amounts, Voskehat and two reds. And it was fantastic, indigenous. So at that point, we changed our whole vision into indigenous varieties. We sat down and said, the world has enough Chardonnay. And that's where our history is. That's what should be explored and ultimately celebrated. So that's how Yacoubian Hubs started. Right now, from 21 on, we are fully harvesting from our own vineyard. Those European varieties are there. And we have Areni, Karet, Khatun, Voskehat in addition. We've planted about 7.5 hectares at this point. And we are now playing with interesting blends with primarily the Armenian indigenous grapes being over 70%. But we will have single varietals as well. Probably a white let's see, a Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc looks interesting.
You know, you and I have a similar background in terms that my dad was knew a lot of the priests who run Chateau Cassara in Stora.
Yeah.
So he would take them, where were kids, would go up there, and he would pick up wine and other things, and ori and other things from there. And he knew the priests. He would go into the caves in Chateau Cassara. I remember those vividly.
That's exactly what I remember too. I'm sure I'm older than you, I think, or maybe we're the same age. They had a special blend of tea, if you remember, at Cassara at the same time.
I don't remember the tea, but I remember the rosé.
The caves and the rosé.
My dad was not a big wine drinker, but he liked the rosé.
Yeah.
He liked the rosé, but he knew the priests, the Jesuit priests who were there. But anyway, coming back to Armenia, that Rind village is a magical place.
Yeah.
I was just recently there. And as I alluded to earlier, we've been talking about getting together and having this discussion. But we were busy. I was traveling. You were traveling.
Yes.
I'm glad we're having this discussion now because I have a lot more insights. And I was just there visiting beautiful vineyards. Both Aravnazor and Rind village are high altitude, beautiful locations, magical locations.
Magical.
Absolutely. And I think if you ask the people in Vaiotsor, they will tell you that they're the best place to grow wines, to grow grapes in Armenia. Of course, there are other places as well, in Ararat Valley as well. But nevertheless, those are magical places where the whole terroir is unique. High altitude, places where indigenous grapes are being grown. There's a lot of discussion going on right now in Armenia, whether to grow indigenous grapes or European varietals. Some people who are growing European varietals are getting some pushback, saying that, as you just said, does the world need another Chardonnay or another Syrah? There seems to be a lot of Syrah being grown in Armenia as well these days.
Hmm.
And some of them are going to be used to blend with indigenous varietals, others to make single varietals. What is your thinking on this?
You know, that's a very good point that you're making about the pushback and what we're looking at. Now, I made the comment earlier, does the world need another Chardonnay? But as you know, then you have the terroir, and these are noble varietals, and therefore wherever they grow, they have a very unique character. And if you taste the Chardonnay from Vaiotsor, it is maybe closer to the Burgundian style. It's not Australia, but if you drink a Chardonnay from Australia, which is beautiful, mm-hmm. you're going to drink two very, very different wines.
Correct.
So why not? Why not expand and why not have these varietals in Armenia? I'm an advocate of that. I'm an advocate of openness, something that we were talking about before we started, which we also lack as far as the marketing and the support. It's not the same thing, but it's a vision of openness. So I'm very open to the idea of different varietals, but not to undermine the indigenous, which is the primary focal point and should always be for Armenia, because that's the cradle of winemaking. That's where it has started. So not European to take over the indigenous, right. but European to complement the indigenous and expand our vision as winemakers in Armenia.
You know, some people believe that a Chardonnay grown in Armenia is an entree to the people to drink starting to drink Armenian wines.
Mm.
And then introduce them to the Voskhod or the Khatun or the whatever else that may be. I want people to drink Armenian wines.
Yeah.
Whether it's a Chardonnay or a Voskhod or RNE. But nevertheless, there's this give and take going on right now in Armenia, which is an interesting conversation. And there's no right or wrong answer, I don't believe. It's just as long as we're producing good wines, it's a good Chardonnay, it's a good RNE, I'm okay with that. Recently, I had the opportunity to taste with four or five other people who are very well versed in the wine. They really know their stuff. We tasted a Georgian Merlot. Hmm. Everybody thought it was a phenomenal wine, but nobody was able to guess that it was a Merlot.
Wow.
That the whole role of the terroir comes into play.
Exactly.
That Merlot is no longer Merlot that you would expect from France or from California. Rather, it's another red varietal from Georgia, which was beautifully made wine, but nobody could guess it was a Merlot.
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to get too intellectual about it, but it's a postmodern view.
Okay.
That, you know, there is no objective reality. So all of it is, it has its subjectivity, and that subjectivity is intricately related to the terroir when it comes to wine. So you're absolutely right. Is a Merlot that tastes amazing from Georgia a Merlot, you know, that you would get from Bordeaux? Or is it a Georgian grape right now, right? So that's the question, and I agree with you. I mean, and also maybe necessary, Stepan, to have these kind of, not clashes, but disagreements, so that we evolve to a better place. I mean, these conversations, I mean, the fact that these conversations about wine are happening in Armenia right now, and there are like different views, is simply amazing. I remember when I used to go there in 2000, the wines weren't so drinkable, you know, but they had this amazing terroir, amazing brandy, and everyone was drinking vodka. Mm-hmm. Now you go, you have the wine bars, you have these conversations, and the moving force is the youth mostly,
right?
Which is great. And then conversations like this, disagreement, as long as it's civil,
right?
Because we have issues with that. as long as it's a civil kind of dialectic that moves us forward, great.
And to that point, there's this amazing wine scene going on in Yerevan right now, where people are into wine. They're having these wine conversations, discussions, vintage variations about who's making what kind of technique they're using. These are all wonderful things to for the growth of the wine industry. And it was just an amazing positive energy about wine, which was wonderful. I met some really young winemakers who are making some phenomenal wines, whether in the traditional style or modern way of making wine, which is the older way of making wine. Things like amber wines, skin contact wines, of that nature, whereas there's a lot of this happening right now. And that's why the World Wine Tourism Conference was just recently held in Yerevan, because of this, all the wine that are being made in Armenia, and wine scene and the energy that's flowing towards that, which is wonderful.
I mean, to give you a contrast here, when on that first visit, when we went, to this very old winery, I won't say the name right now. And obviously from the outside, as we were going to walk into the winery, you would see that there were some hygiene issues. I mean, if you compare to Napa or Sonoma, it wasn't shining, brilliant, rocks and all of that, and the stone and this and that, and you could smell the mustiness and so on. So before we went in, we had some trepidations because Paul is with us. We're trying to impress him so that he works with us. So, you know, I said, Paul, don't expect too much when you go in, because the wine industry has not really advanced as the brand. He said, you know, don't worry. My brother was telling him that. He said, don't worry about it. Why? You know, I've been in Mendoza in the 80s and I've seen everything. Right. He said, it can't be bad. So we walk in, he looks around, he said, this is bad. So this older gentleman comes, who's the winemaker, with the doctor's gown, white gown, and so on. So we talk, a very sweet man. And then he gave us a taste. And Paul took a taste. He said, if this guy is making this wine from this winery, this can be an excellent place to make wine. And that was in some ways prophetic, because then it evolved. Now you know how well the wineries are doing. And then it turned out that our winemaker in Armenia that we work with, Arman, it turned out that that old gentleman was his father. Wow. I learned many years later. Wow. So there is this very interesting connections.
And there's a generational thing also. People with fathers and grandfathers have stayed in the business.
Absolutely.
Of making wines, whether for themselves or for others. You know, I always say that about 10, 15 years ago, the wines that were coming out of Armenia would either taste like vinegar or molasses.
Exactly.
There was no happy medium. There was nothing there. But thanks to diasporan involvement and investment, people like you, people like Zori Karibian, the wine has gone up to a point where now we're competing internationally.
We are definitely
some of the top appellations, regions of the world, and I'm happy to do it. I'm happy about it, and this is only the beginning. This is the wine renaissance we're going through, and it's going to be better and better over time. And
you left your name out, Stepan. I think you had a really big role in introducing Armenian wines, especially to America, and that needs to be mentioned.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you. What's it like to be working with Paul Hobbs?
Amazing. You know, for someone like Paul to ultimately decide to invest his time and energy in a project like this, means a lot. It means that, because you know, Paul has vision. I don't know that guy is born with vision or how it has been honed to the degree. I see him as a perfect balance of an artist and a scientist, and that's reflected in his approach and in his wines. Of course, it's challenging because he's very demanding. Mm-hmm. He's very quality-driven, and you cannot get away with just doing things half-assed, if I may say. So in that sense, he keeps all of us in line, including Armenia, where he visits twice a year. But at the end of that trip, he said, I'm going to really do this, and not as a consultant, but as a partner. So in that respect, you know, it's great because he's a partner.
Right.
And he is really both emotionally and practically invested in the project. By the way, another story that he told me years later, these coincidences are interesting, Winiarski from Stag's Leap, who passed away recently, I believe. Mm-hmm. He was retiring, and at that time, Paul was making wine for Mondavi. And they had a retirement party with all the winemakers, because Winiarski used to call the winemakers to his place, and they used to discuss techniques, wines. That's the openness, you know. And share information. And at the end of the get-together, he gave a small vial to each winemaker who was there. Mm-hmm. And he said, in that vial, you're going to find two seeds. Those seeds come from Armenia.
Wow.
That's where wine has started.
Wow, wow.
This is a Stag's Leap wine, and I have goosebumps as I tell this story every time. And now we're in Armenia and making wine, you know, from Sonoma to here to our country.
You know, it's quite interesting that I've studied some of his actions, Paul's work, whether it's in Argentina, whether it's in France, but of course in Napa and California and Armenia. He seems to be drawn to areas, particularly in the case of Argentina and Armenia, where with amazing potential, where he's pushing that agenda, that he's pushing that envelope into developing these high-end wines, which are evolving over time, but he's seeing the potential of these areas on the world wine scene.
That's exactly true. He has a nose for places that are not yet on the geography, but he sees the potential, he smells the potential. That's how he started in Argentina with the Catenas. And he focused on Malbec when they were making cabs and Chardonnay and so on. He focused on the Malbec, and everyone was saying, no, you know, that's not going to work. And we know where Malbec is
right
today. I mean, but even now, you know, he recently, I don't know how long ago, he went to Coombsville in Napa and bought a vineyard. And for the first Coombsville was the latest AVA in the region. He just got 100 points on his cab, which was like amazing. Now Coombsville is, you know.
He has a certain style when it comes to wines, and I see this in his Napa, and I see this Argentinian wine, I see this in his Armenian wine.
Yeah.
There's a certain style of which people seem to like, and they garner the accolades, they get the points, but there's no disputing it. That's Paul Hopps style.
Mm. Yeah.
And which I'm seeing also in your wines as well.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I mean, obviously he's your partner, but he's also he's an internationally renowned winemaker, so that helps your brand as well get into areas,
absolutely,
get into markets, get into distribution, which otherwise may not be able to, which is wonderful, obviously. Smart move on your part.
Yeah. There's always that dimension, you know, ultimately,
absolutely,
of marketing and business. That's part of it. And, you know, we're proud of that because, you know, our distributor is Chambers, used to be Wine Bowl.
Right.
We moved to Chambers. And, you know, that's like one of the premier,
yes,
distributor. And to have a wine, Armenian wine, in their portfolio is good for us, obviously, but it's also good for Armenia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole kind of venture is about that. For you as well, I mean, it is business on the one hand, but it's also our patriotism. It's our nationalism in many ways.
Absolutely. And I think that's very smart in a sense that some winemakers do not appreciate the fact that I don't care how wonderful your wine is. If you cannot tell a story, if you cannot market it properly, if you cannot sell it, first of all, you're going to go broke. Second of all, nobody's going to know about it.
Exactly.
Some people don't seem to appreciate that. Marketing is so important. I talked about this to some winemakers in Armenia on my recent trip. You know, you have a good wine. It's not great yet, but it will get great over time. But you got to be able to tell that story and introduce your wine to people who are willing to pay for it. And that takes marketing, that takes money, that takes effort, that takes time. Some people don't seem to have that appreciation.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you put your finger on the issue. If the consumer is going to pay $20 for an Armenian wine, all you have to do, go to Ralph's,
right,
and see all the wines at that range, $20. And to compete with that is a strategic challenge, right? And the story, and I say this when people talk to me and during interviews, some brands, non-Armenian brands, try to come up with stories. Mm-hmm. They take a small kind of a piece of a story and then they build a whole narrative around it. We don't need to do that. The story is there for us.
Correct.
And not to be able to really amplify that internationally, I think it's a disservice not only to your wine, but to Armenia.
Absolutely. We have so much to be proud of. I mean, 6,200, at least 6,200 years of winemaking tradition. Yes. And the story tells itself. But again, you need to make effort to showcase that to the consumer. And as to your point, if I want to spend the American consumer wants to spend $15-$20, all you got to go to the shopping Ralph's, and there are thousands of bottles of wine there in that range. That's a sweet spot for supermarket wines, $15-$20 wines. That's a sweet spot. If you're going to compete with that, you got to stand out, both in terms of the bottle, the look, and the story.
Everything.
And that takes time, that takes effort, that takes money, and that takes patience.
Yeah.
And some people are not willing to do that. Another thing that I noticed on this trip is that some of the winemakers seem to be only drinking their own wine, which is a very dangerous and incorrect way of making wine. You got to know what your neighbor is making. You got to know what some other people are making in other countries. Because if you're competing in the international arena, you just cannot be drinking your own wine and thinking it's wonderful. There is no gauge. There is no comparison. But there is no bottom. It was funny.
That's such a good observation.
A lot of people, they seem to be only drinking their own wine. I said, I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be disrespectful. I didn't want to tell them that you should try your neighbor's wines also. You should try what's being made in California, in France, in Italy, in Georgia. So you have a better world view of what's the standard. It's just funny that way. I just found it. By the way, I see this in California also. Some small winemakers, they've only been drinking their own wine for years, and they don't know what's being made by their neighbor or the next county over or next state over. You just find it very fascinating. It's a fascinating mindset.
That's a very... I hadn't thought of that. I don't know if I'm guilty of that. When I go to a restaurant, there's our wine. I order it, but...
You're making a point there, right? You're making a special
point. I'm making
point.
A point, and I'm hoping that, you know, it increases their sales.
Absolutely. But that's different.
But sure. You look in my cellar.
Okay.
It's all wine. Probably mine is 0.5% of my cellar.
Okay.
And internationally too, not in terms of Armenian only. And
right.
I think that's very important. And then also your palate.
Right. Exactly.
You know, if you're drinking only one wine, especially only your wine, it's going to be like a group thing. You think that that's the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And your palate gets tired and you don't evolve. Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, that's the point I make to some of the people in Armenia, and that's the point I make to some people here, that your palate has to evolve. My palate has evolved over time. I'm sure yours
absolutely.
Has as well. That's because I'm open to tasting a lot of wines, and I do taste a lot of wines, but that's the whole point. You want to evolve. You cannot set... I'm not the same person that was drinking the $1.99 wines from Trader Joe's when I was at UCLA.
Exactly. That's exactly what I did at UCLA.
Exactly. They used to have these Chiantis for $1.99 at
yeah,
UCLA
yeah.
when I was at UCLA
yeah.
from Trader Joe's. And it's just funny.
Which years were you there?
I graduated.
Now I'm going to age.
I graduated 84.
I graduated 85.
Okay.
UCLA.
So we're there at the same time. That's where yeah. I know you from originally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's why you evolve. I mean, and nowadays, besides some of my favorite Armenian wines, the wines I really enjoy drinking as well are the older vintages of French and Italian wines.
And that's where I have been in the last couple of years. Okay.
So what are some of your favorite wines besides your wines and Armenian wines?
I mean, I'm very much into Burgundy, although that's a dangerous interest. But I like Pinot Noir, uh-huh. Generally speaking. I'm mesmerized by Italian wines, a bit more complicated to understand. I'm drinking some Italian, but primarily... outside of Armenia, French. I had some wine recently from Portugal,
mm-hmm.
Which was very interesting as well. More old world at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, I was in Barolo last summer.
Oh.
We visited some of amazing, amazing wineries, and these were appointments that were made from here by their importers. So we really got top treatment.
Amazing.
And it was amazing. Same thing happened. It was like a 2.5-3 week trip between Champagne, Burgundy, and Piedmont Barolo.
Oh, wow.
It was an amazing trip.
Can it be better?
It was just great. And I was there with some other wine people as well. So we were treated royally. Some of the oldest vintages were open for us. Some amazing food. It was just a beautiful place.
I mean, you know, Gaia Conterna. They're exactly.
And so it was. So, I mean, that's where my palate is these days. Also, although I am developing some appreciation for some Georgian wines, there's anywhere else, some horrible Georgian wines, and there's some really top ones. It's just a matter of who's the winemaker and what their focus is.
Yeah. So you were telling me that, and I want to explore that further because I'm not very well versed. I mean, I know I've had a few Saperavi, but I'm not well versed.
So. There's some amazing ones. The whole wine scene is evolving everywhere. And I think we're living in the golden ages of some amazing wines right now. And it's a great thing for the consumer.
Absolutely.
Having a lot of choices.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to where you purchased the vineyards. How difficult or easy it was to find good vineyards at the time? Because I'm being told right now that anything worth owning doesn't exist anymore. In the areas that we've talked about, Biozzo region.
Yeah. You know, I think it was much easier when we were there. We were basically looking at, empty lands. We looked at existing vineyards as well. It was challenging, especially, Stepan, when you're coming from outside and you see a nice vineyard that a person wants to sell, and they see your interest, immediately the prices go crazy. So that was challenging, and I think at the time we paid probably 2.5 or 3 times more than what it was worth it at that time. Now it's
even more.
Now it's even more. Now I hear the same thing because a lot of outsiders, diasporans, as well as, I don't know if non-Armenians, bought a lot of lands in especially the Vajotsor area. So I don't know what's the availability right now. We were very much interested in the northern region of near Ichevan, right? Okay. And there it's different because you don't have big lots. So you have villagers, each of them owning less than 1 hectare. So if you want to do a lot, that's, let's say, 10 hectares, you have to deal with 10 or 15 villagers and hoping that each one of them will sell. And then as you find two, the prices of the other 8 suddenly quadruple. So we left Ichevan and we didn't do it. Although that's a very interesting region.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. I know it's too plush and so on, but there are places there for Pinot Noir. It would be interesting.
And one of the issues...
The Davos region.
Okay. In northern.
Northern, yeah.
One of the issues that apparently exists right now is people are willing to sell land, but you cannot get clear title for it.
Hmm.
Because it's owned by different family members, and each family member has to... Has to agree to the sale of the land. So one family member will tell you, okay, I will sell you this 5 hectares of land, but I can only give you clearance on half of it. The others, you have to convince the others who may be in the United States, who may be somewhere else nowadays, and you have to get in touch with them to make sure they're selling. I'm sure they're not going to give that clearance for free. So there are all these issues that could come up during the transaction.
Yeah, so that's very complicated. And then there's been a proliferation of both vineyards as well as plantings. So I'm concerned that at this point there might be some overproduction as well that's going to really have an impact on the market in terms of grapes as well, you know, prices of grapes and all of that. So it's an interesting, I think, transitional time.
One of the issues I discussed with some of the winemakers in Vajoco region is the issue of lack of infrastructure in Vajoco. It's a beautiful part of the country, but people, it's not like Napa Valley or Sonoma where you can go spend 2-3 days there. There are no proper hotels. There are some bed and breakfasts that you can rent for a few days here and there. But the idea, the way this wine becomes a destination, because you keep bring people there, keep them there for 2-3 days, wine them, dine them, keep them active. Here, what happens, people come in the morning, go to a few wineries, and then go back to Yerevan. Or they bring them by the buses, few locate 2-3 wineries, and take them back to Yerevan. You're not benefiting the entire group. You're benefiting maybe 2-3 wineries, and that's about it. That's what's needed right now. I understand there are 2 large-scale hotels that are being built right now.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Please, elaborate on that, please.
No, I mean, the whole idea, I know probably as much as you do, but you're absolutely right. Because if you look at Vajoczor, you've been there, it has the potential of being a beautiful wine country where you have tourism and wine tourism. For that, primarily, you need governmental support. And you need a lot of governmental support, which needs to be encouraged so that people invest more securely. And there are individuals who know and are seeing this potential. Tüfenkian is building a very nice hotel there. I don't know when it will be ready. An American Armenian. I think there's another very modern one that's recently been built or is being built, you know. And so there's a few wineries. I know that one winery is going to be built. We intend and we are working on plans of building at least a hospitality center on our vineyard. So if more happens and encourages visits like Sonoma or Napa, there will be a, I would say, revolutionary change. I mean, RNE1 Cave is there as well. So it's a natural destination, but it needs to be a destination where people are going to go, find nice hotel, find dining, and want to stay there for a few days.
Absolutely. I mean, what you're saying as far as having hospitality where people can come in, taste the wines, have a nice
have
lunch
a snack,
or dinner.
Yeah.
And the Old Bridge Winery, which is there, and they're doing a phenomenal job there. The whole family's involved.
I've seen it, yeah.
Great location, great venue, great wines. And and they're busy, and that's wonderful. And imagine if there were like 50 more like people like that, wineries like that, where people are, these are easily accessible wineries and vineyards where people come in, taste some good wine, drink some good wines, have some good food, enjoy the beautiful natural beauty around you, and go back with memories, wonderful memories, and tell your friends and family about it. That's what I think Southern Armenia, Vajoczor needs that. One of the issues keep coming up is the instability of the area political situation, which is maybe holding some people back. But to your point, though, there are these 2 major hotels being built, again, by diaspora investment.
Yes.
And which is wonderful. And just have to add to the overall snowball effect that we need to cultivate, not it's the wrong word, but to develop the area into a big wine touristic destination. For people who will stay there over at night, spend the night there, go have dinner at a nice, wonderful restaurant, and stay there for 2-3 days and go back to Yerevan afterwards.
Yeah. And I mean, you see, the food has amazing potential, the freshness of it. Mm-hmm. If you want to think of farm to table,
right.
go to Vajoczor, right? It's like, it is literally farm to table right now, but you can develop that into a Michelin-level restaurants.
Absolutely. There. I mean, the food scene in Yerevan is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so many international-themed restaurants, anything from sushi to Korean to Japanese to Italian, French, of course, Armenian, Middle Eastern. And again, it was just phenomenal food in Yerevan right now.
Yeah. And if you were there like in the 90s, there were probably just a couple of restaurants that, you know, you would venture to go eat. Now, you know, you have so many options.
And again, I think part of it has to do with the fact that it was such a large influx of Syrian Armenians.
Yes.
Who went there because of the war in Syria.
Yes.
And it's all for the benefit of Armenia.
Yes.
And us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you already mentioned that you're building the...
We're intending to, yes.
Is that one of your plans?
Yes.
And you also mentioned that you have you're going to be releasing some single varietals other than...
Well, we're experimenting with it, so we're talking about 2023 vintage.
Okay.
So possibly... They're fermented separately right now. So we did some blending when we were there in May with Paul. So we blended some of our whites, which are ready, you know, to be bottled, and then also the reds. But we also have single varietals that are fermented. So we have to make that decision. But absolutely, we will have... I think single varietals in addition to our main program, which is indigenous.
And as a wine person, I'm always looking for the next thing. And I think these will be the next thing for us to taste and enjoy and so on. What kind of wood do you use in your treatments?
Well, the... White and the RNE have no wood.
Okay.
So it's stainless steel, fermented, aged, and then bottled. So we focus on freshness there. The Sarpina is French oak,
okay.
Used French oak, and it's in very limited quantities. But it's a variety of, you know, different... winemakers. We have Leroy, we have
Arsot, okay. Yeah. You know, one of the main barrel and woods they were used to use in Armenia is the Artsakhov.
Yeah.
Which we don't have.
We don't have it anymore.
And I talked to some people, they say we have enough wood right now to maybe for the next 2-3 years, and that's about it. So a lot of people are already experimenting with French and some Italian and Slovenian oaks, and they're experimenting right now. Do you have any plans to use anything other than French?
Not at this point. We will use French. So, but you know, you have Hungarian as well, I think, right?
Right.
And the Artsakh wood was very interesting as well. You know, the
mm-hmm.
tight grains and all of that.
Right.
But we're using French. Yeah.
I think, well, as you said, Artsakh oak tend to be tighter.
Yeah.
So it tamed the RNE grape better, I think.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of style and preferences, what you're doing.
You have to be very careful, I think, from my experience with RNE and wood, French wood. You know, it can be overwhelming very quickly, especially if it's used, if it's new oak. So we're careful about that.
So you're, because Vahe Kushkirian was also experimenting at one point, RNE and French oak. So I think it's, when it comes to making a, it boils down to being an artist when it comes to making wine. It's
exactly.
An art more than a science. You just have to balance things out properly to make sure that...
one doesn't overwhelm the other, yeah.
Because I have tasted many wines from Napa Valley which
overoaked.
You don't even taste the fruit anymore.
Yeah.
It's a shame because yeah. You're starting out with good fruit and then you're ruining it afterwards.
Exactly.
Because but some people like that, I guess.
Because it's, I guess for some people it's more drinkable. It brings a sweeter dimension in mm-hmm. some ways, you know, the cinnamon, vanilla-like taste and... Some people enjoy
Some people like that.
Some people enjoy that. I mean, I really like also are wines that don't see oak. Mm-hmm. And it really reflects the terroir in a very interesting way.
What was your first vintage again?
2014.
2014. It's been 10 years.
Yeah.
Have you seen a change in your wine? How is it changing?
That's a good question. I mean, I haven't really looked at the look at it systematically, but every vintage has a different expression. Right. And not one vintage is absolutely duplicated, although there is consistency. I think that the primary change with ours, 21 forward, is because all the fruit is coming from our vineyard. Okay. And the viticulture aspect, that is where Paul is very, very strict. The viticultural aspect is producing grapes that are amazing, that are really wonderful, and we're seeing that. And that's going to be reflected in the bottle. Paul's philosophy is focus on vineyard. You know, you go and try to see him, you're not going to find him because he's walking in a vineyard, either 2 hours away in Gold Rock or in Coombsville or right in his backyard. You know, everything starts from there. So our evolution, the main change, I think it's pretty uniform up to 21. From 22, there's going to be interesting changes. In terms of the taste of the RNA that's coming from our vineyard. Now, with the white, Stepan, there's more fluctuation because of the blends. We have always blended the white, primarily Voskehat, but the 2014 vintage had Khatun, it had Garantemak, you know, and it was a amazing blend. 2015, Garantemak wasn't available, or it wasn't, the quality wasn't good. So you have more Khatuni, you have, more Kharj maybe. So there's differences there.
You know, we've been getting a lot of, over the years, we've been getting a lot of Voskehat in terms of white wines, but I think Khatuni and Garantemak are really going to find their place. I tasted some amazing Garantemak.
I have a soft spot for Garantemak.
Oh, it was beautiful. Right? These were barrel tastings I did.
Huh. And really?
Yeah, it were very, very interesting. And a lot of times they're being used for blending purposes right now, but I think they're going to find their place over time because of their uniqueness.
Yeah.
Once again, they're unique varietal from Armenia, and they're so different. And Khatun is quite different also. It's nice acidity as well, which Voskehat lacks sometimes.
Yeah.
It's more tropical, where Khatun is more acidity.
Yeah.
And I think it will go very well with a lot of dishes where it also would probably be able to age it longer as well because of higher acidity.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting. There was to taste these wines on their own and then tasting the blend together. Now you see why they're being blended together.
Yeah. Yeah. Acidity is a challenge. So also, you know, the soil, the malic acid is low in Vajotsor. So that's a... You know, that's a challenge, and it's an important one, you know, as you know, the acidity. First, 2014, we also had Kurdi in it.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, which is, again, very interesting. Floral notes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we have over 300.
It's called Kurdi Jagat, but we changed it to Kurdi.
Okay. Yeah, that's better. I mean, we have over 300 varietals that we can use over time.
That's right.
And we will be going with RNE and Voskia for a while now.
Yeah.
And they were good entrees into the international wine scene, but I think we have a lot more richness to offer to the world.
In the Reds, Kachet is very interesting.
Right. Kachet is very, Hachtanag is interesting.
Yeah.
There's some people who experiment who are making with Hachtanag, which is kind of unique. It needs to be tamed a little bit. But I think it's doing well. I tasted this Reserve Hachtanag in Armenia, which was beautiful.
Hmm.
Very well done.
100%.
100%. Very well done. And Arani and Hakhtanagar being blended, a lot of it also.
Okay.
That I'm seeing that as well. So it just, you know, God bless the experimenters.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
It takes time. Sometimes it'll work, sometimes it don't work, but you don't know until you try. Okay, wonderful. Vikan, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I really appreciate you coming here, telling us your story, inspiring us with your story, and of course, on a selfish note, offering us great wines.
I'm very happy to, Stefan.
Thank you very much for being here. I really enjoyed our conversation. Keep up the good work. And remember, always drink the good stuff. Cheers, everybody. Cheers.